Welcome. We're going to learn a lot today, and we're going to learn it from Leif Winar. Leif is American, living in London, went to school in Ohio, is a philosopher, has written a book recently, Blood Oil is the name of it. And I became intrigued with his interpretation, again, from a different direction I come from, geologist, and being in the oil business for, I guess it's 100 years now, I'm not sure, but a long time. And but we want to talk about the oil industry globally is kind of where we want to come from. And you and I came down to one point. It's stupid to buy oil from the enemy. Wasn't that where we were?
That's right.
Long discussion last night.
That's right.
Okay. You tell me how you came up that was a bad idea.
Well, let me say first, Boone, how grateful I am to be here on your podcast, which I think is fantastic. And it's true, we come at this from different directions. I mean, you're an outrageously successful oil man. And I grew up in Ohio, and I turned out to be a Harvard-trained philosopher.
Yeah, but you know, you've got good oil production in eastern Ohio now.
That's right.
New production, not the old stuff.
And you know what? It could have been that we would be not so far apart. The legend in my family is that when my family came over from Europe, we settled in East Texas, and we had hundreds of thousands of acres of cotton plantation. And the Yankees took that land for taxes after the Civil War, but under that land was later discovered the Spindletop Field, which, as you know, was one of the biggest fields when it was first tapped, over 100,000 barrels a day for over a week.
Yeah, but Spindletop was kind of, most major oil companies have a field that they're connected to, a big oil field connected to. That one, Spindletop, was kind of the cornerstone for Texaco.
And Gulf got a little bit in there, and Chevron too. I mean, a lot of companies got their start.
Oh, yeah, they did.
So much oil. And that could have been my oil. So it could have been that I could have been an oil man like you, but instead I became a philosopher.
But you know, my start
was
eastern Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, big oil fields in Oklahoma and all. We didn't have any land in my family.
Is that right?
No, we didn't have a big cotton plantation, and we didn't own anything. We talked about this last night too, that Ohio State and of course I told you that I had a cousin that was there, but Oklahoma State's where I went to school. Great education, started out with nothing, and damn if it didn't work out for me. So
good. You have your OSU. I have my OSU.
That's right.
Yeah, slightly different. But on oil, I'm so encouraged that we see the same threats and the same opportunities. We see the same truth, and it's great that we can help spread that truth.
But here you have these candidates running for president of the United States, and I honestly don't think they fully appreciate and understand that 1970, the United States peaked on oil at 10 million barrels a day, then started to decline. 73 came the Arab embargo, scared the hell out of everybody, and Washington said, we have to get in position to protect oil in the Mideast because we're going to need all that oil. Ours is declining, we're going to deplete, and it's going to be a horror story if we don't have control. So they moved the Fifth Fleet into the Mideast, base Fifth Fleet out of Bahrain, and now what do you have? Now we're the oil policemen of the world. We see that everything comes through the Straits of Hormuz. The tankers do come out and around the world. How much of that oil do we get?
Yeah.
It's
not much.
Less than 10%.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we are guarding the tankers for China and Europe. They go out, take the oil. I think what's going to happen is if this guy, Trump, ends up president of the United States, he is going to do something about the fact that we are providing all that protection and we get nothing from any of the other countries. It's just ignored. Now, I said to the, I was in the Pentagon for a meeting a year or two ago, and I said, why don't you guys charge for what you do over in the Mideast as far as protecting tankers coming past Iran and out the Straits of Hormuz? And they said, what do you have in mind? I said, charge them for that protection. I said, well, you can charge them. They just won't pay you. And so that was the answer I got. And I think that's true. You're going to have to negotiate payment if from other countries for what you're doing. But, okay, you wrote the book.
Good. So let me just say something that chimes into that from the book. I mean, let's think about whether this strategy is working that we've been going with for all this time. So think about where our biggest threats and crises for the United States have come from for the past 40 years. I mean, we remember when the Soviets surged ahead of us in the nuclear arms race. We remember the Iranians funding terrorism for 30 years.
And still are.
And still are. And then it was Saddam. And then it was Gaddafi. And there was the genocide in Darfur. And now what do we see? We see hot conflicts in Syria, Iraq, Libya, Yemen. We see these two oil-fueled theocracies of Saudi Arabia and Iran stirring up religious hatred in the region. We see this refugee crisis coming into Europe, putting pressure on European political systems. All of those threats and crises have one thing in common. They all come from oil states, and that means it's our money. It's our money that we pay at the pump, which has been going to pay for those missiles and bombs.
Okay, but we are the biggest user of oil every day in the world. 20 million barrels a day. Second to us is China.
Yeah.
10 million. So we're twice as big a user of energy as China is. Okay, but once again, we do not get that much oil from the Mideast.
That's right.
Yeah, and most of the oil, we produce roughly 10 and buy 10. And so we're buying half our oil. Same thing the Chinese are. They use 10, produce 5, buy 5. And so here you've got the United States. Now we have an unbelievable amount of natural gas. Better fuel than gasoline or diesel. It is a better fuel. It's cleaner fuel. It's on the higher end of the hydrocarbons. And we have not figured out how to use it in America.
Good. And so here's the thing we agree on. Of all those barrels coming in, only a small portion now comes from the authoritarian regimes in the Middle East. And we don't need to buy that oil from those guys anymore.
No, you can announce in the morning, we're not going to buy any more OPEC oil.
Yeah. See, that's the thing I think people don't quite understand. We don't need that oil anymore. We don't need to hand over hundreds of billions of dollars to those guys anymore to get energy. We have enough energy of our own.
It right was now. The greatest transfer of wealth from one group of people to another was buying oil from the Mideast by the United States.
Good.
We spent over $1 trillion buying oil from them. And they're now, they cannot believe that the United States went down to 4 million barrels of production a day and went back up to 9.7, right at 10 million. And we could have gone higher, but the price of oil dropped. That's okay. That's just markets working. I'm not complaining about that. The price will come back up again. But of the today, there's 93 million barrels of oil used every day in the world. 70% of that goes to transportation fuel. And you have got two candidates, Sanders and Clinton, that say they would cut out all fracking of wells. And then, but they're not open for questions. I'd say, what are you talking about? That of the 93 million barrels, 70% of it goes for transportation fuel. They say they don't want fossil fuels. Well, tell me what you're going to use. What do you have in mind? they have nothing in mind. They don't know what they're talking about. But I'm not sure some of the Republicans are so sure about energy. They don't realize. But the greatest transfer of wealth occurred when we bought up to 7.4 million barrels of oil a day from OPEC.
Good. And so let's think about what happened to our money. So you're a geological scientist, you know about this, and let me just add a political science aspect to this, because when you look at what happens when we send our money over there, oil is power. And in non-democratic countries like in the Middle East, it is absolute power. It comes with no strings attached, never has to be paid back, and the guys can use it to oppress their own people or spread their ideologies around the world.
But you say oil is power, but oil is money.
It is.
Yeah, you can change it for money.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's the power of oil is the power of money. But in these countries, it comes absolutely unchecked. Now, when we try to check that power from the outside, it's hard. I mean, here we are, the United States, faced with these guys who are getting all that money from the oil, and we try to control it from the outside. So we have three strategies, and let me just ask, how is it going? We can try to make an alliance with one of these dictators, like with the Shah of Iran, or with Gaddafi, or Saddam, or the Saudi. How's that going? We can try military, right? Gulf War I, Gulf War II, Libya, put drones. How's that going? We can try sanctions, Iran, Iraq, Saudi, Iran, Iraq, Russia, Libya, Sudan. How's that going? Well, here's what the CIA director said about how's it's going. A few weeks ago, he stood up in front of Congress and he said, the Middle East is worse than it's been in 50 years and the region is facing unprecedented bloodshed.
We're doing really good.
We just can't check the power of oil from the outside. We've got to change our strategy, and I think that means stop buying oil from those guys just because they have control over their country.
And we don't need their oil.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's not understood in this country.
That's right.
I hope your book, Blood Oil, is read by everybody and they understand that this stupid idea of buying oil from the enemy.
That's right. I mean, we need to think that the next time we go to the pump, we might be sending money to people who consider us to be enemies, and we might be helping the spread of ideologies that are hostile to our way of life. We don't have to do that anymore.
No, but your politicians have to get informed.
Yeah. See, the thing is, they always look at the short term. And the short term, it's always easiest to do business as usual. But the long term is real trouble, because in the Middle East, it's been bad enough for 40 years, but now they tell us that region in the Middle East and Africa, it's going to be getting hotter and hungrier and thirstier at the same time as they got a big youth bulge, a lot of young people who are dissatisfied. It's going to get more and more unstable for the sake of our own energy security, national security. We got to stop sending our money to that region in exchange.
Exactly. I couldn't agree with you more.
Great.
Okay, we've pretty well analyzed the problem. A problem well analyzed is a problem half solved.
That's right.
Okay, now, give me, if we're in the middle of this election, but tell me what you, if you were advising any of these candidates or all these candidates on energy, tell me what you would tell them.
Well, you got the Pickens plan, and I've got the Winard plan. It's a 3-point plan, but I'll tell you, if we do point one, then I'll be pretty happy. Point one is just for us to pass a law saying that peacefully, responsibly, gradually, we are going to taper off oil imports from all authoritarian countries. The United States doesn't need that oil anymore. We got to get out of business.
You know, if you did that, you know what would happen? Man, you would turn everything upside down around the world, which I'm a change advocate.
Yeah.
So I'd love it.
Look, why don't we look after our own interests while we're doing the right thing? United States of America could do the right thing, stand up for our own principles, say we don't believe we should be in business with these guys, and lead the world once again because we're standing up for our principles. If we were people of integrity, our ideas could help to change the world.
Okay, you said something that triggered. I don't do anything that's not in my own best interest. Does that sound selfish to you?
In this case, interest and principles line up, nope, as they often do.
But why would I ever do anything that was not in my own best interest? Why would I go out and do something that was against my own best interest?
Well, in this case, you don't have to.
I know, but it's a tricky statement. But when thought out, of course you would. What's in your best interest is in the best interest of your family, of you,
good,
of, you know, your friends, everybody else. So it's...
And your country.
And your country, right.
That's right. So your best interest, the country's best interest in this case, is the same as standing up for its principles,
sure,
and saying, we don't believe we're going to be in business with these guys anymore just because they keep control of their country. Now, if we do that, then we can do point two.
Okay.
Which is to lead the Western world to do the same thing. The West, as a whole, has enough energy now without all those barrels from authoritarian countries. So we could help our European friends also to get off authoritarian oil. And if we do steps one and two, well then step three is talking to our Chinese friends and trying to convince them that it's in their interest also to announce that at some point in the future they're not going to accept this oil anymore.
Why hasn't China had a terrorist attack?
The terrorists are focused on us because we've had so much trouble in the region so far. But imagine the day when the United States led the West to say, we're not going to be in business with the guys who are oppressing and attacking the people of these countries. We're going to stand on the side of those people for a while. We've got our own energy. If the Chinese want to buy it, well, then they'll become dependent for their energy imports on this increasingly unstable region of the world. We can just ask the Chinese, do you really want to buy oil from ISIS 2.0? That's not a recipe for security of Chinese energy. For their own interest, they should also see that the future needs to be different.
But they have to have oil. We have oil.
Yeah.
They buy oil.
Yeah.
And they're going to buy more oil.
That's right.
So, but we can announce in the morning. But then you put together Mexico, the United States, and Canada,
yeah,
under a NAFTA. Already that NAFTA is set up. It could come in under NAFTA, and there is a complete security, energy security, for North America.
And if we did that, that would be enough to change.
It would be. You're exactly right.
That's the leadership we need. We need a leader to stand up and say, we've done this long enough. We've seen bad results from the old way of business long enough. We got to change. We got to stand up for our principles. Get out of business with these guys.
That's right. Yeah, got to get out of business. Well, if they left it up to us, it would be easy. We people that look at my podcast are going to like today, and they're going to enjoy it knowing you. And I'm hoping they're going to buy your book.
Thanks so much, Boone.
Sure.
I'm glad we see the same things from different angles, and it's been an absolute pleasure working with you.
You're living in London, but you don't have the accent. You've got to develop that, because it's hard to sell you from London with that Ohio accent.
You know how stupid it sounds when a boy from Ohio tries to talk like someone from London?
All right. Well, thank you. It was a great interview.
It's a great pleasure.